This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's Matt McNeil show for your Wednesday. Stein coming in here in a little bit, as well as also we have got a Democrat of the day, would be Senator Jason Isaacson is going to join us here. He's got an interesting predicament. We'll talk about that. He's actually been redistricted in with another senator on some things. So we'll get to that. That's coming up in the 5 o'clock hour. Patrick, how are we today?
Doing good, doing good.
I will say that, first of all, we have had a lot of fun with AM 950 Wordle. It's kind of one of those things where I'm kind of surprised at how many people are entering it every day. But it's by all means, please do. That's the concept. Now, if you haven't been here for the last week plus, we decided to do AM 950 Wordle because, you know, we really can't come up with our own ideas. So we just stole the name Wordle and added it to something and made up our own thing. That's how radio works, kids. That's how this whole thing works. Let's just tear down the entire the glamour of it all, shall we? There you go. Anyway, we're doing AM 950 Wordle. And the simple concept is this. I'm going to give you three letters. They have to appear in a word. It can be any length word. It just has to be a legit word in order. And the way I say it is I could have, C-A-T, and you could submit the word cat, but the word act would not be acceptable because that's not in order. So they have to be in order I give them. If you get a word in, you basically have a chance at winning an AM 950 calendar by the end of the show today. Now, the ways you can enter this in is, one, call Patrick. He's lonely and loves to chat. 952-946-6205. Not as lonely as Brett. Holy God. What an emotional crybaby that is. But, no, Patrick's cool. He takes a vacation and basically just bad. I'm a horrible coworker. Call Patrick, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205 with your AM 950 Wordle word. Or if you so desire, you can head to the Facebook page of both AM 950 Radio and Progressive Citizen X Matt McNeil Show. We stream the show live there. And so you can enter in your Wordle word on the comment section of the live stream. And we've had a lot of people enter in there. As a matter of fact, I believe, was it yesterday's winner was from the live stream. So you can enter in both ways. All right. So there you go. And you can get yourself, once again, an AM 950 calendar. So are you ready? Here are your three letters for today. O as in October. X as in X-ray. S as in Sierra. O as in October, X as in X-ray, S as in Sierra. All right? If you've got a word, AM 950 Wordle word, 952-946-6205, or you can head over to the live streams, enter it in. You have until the end of the show. At the end of the show, with all the correct entries, we randomly pick one, and they will win themselves an AM 950 calendar. Now, if you want to get the calendar without actually having to jump through all the hoops of AM 950 Wordle, by all means, head over to AM950Radio.com membership tab. You can subscribe, become a member of AM 950. You make a one-time or a recurring donation. You can find out all the details there. As a thank you, we will send you an AM 950 calendar. So, good luck. OXS is your three letters for today. Good luck. There's about four words I came up with that fall into that one. So we'll see. I'm always amazed. I come up with like four words, Patrick, and I always get told about six or seven more I never even thought of. So I'm enjoying this myself. So, Patrick, have you ever been to the fine Metroplex of Glencoe?
Have.
Okay. So you can, it's been a while since I was down there. This is just cold, man. The city of to the west of Minneapolis has been named the ugliest city in Minnesota. It's all capital letters, A-L-O-T, travel, recently published a list of the ugliest cities in each state and named Glencoe Minnesota's least attractive municipality. Whether it's from a lack of maintenance or just poor design choices, these 50 spots are more than an eyesore. They may be great places to live, but these cities won't be winning any beauty contests anytime soon. That's just cold, man. Glencoe, I'll hold them. You hit them, okay? Glencoe, Minnesota is about 3.17 square miles. The county seat of McLeod County. It's about 54 miles west of Minneapolis. And a lot's reason for naming Glencoe as the state's ugliest town is interesting. A lot of it appears to be based on reviews left by parents on the school finding website Niche, focusing on the city's apparent insularity as opposed to its infrastructure. Here's how a lot travel describes Glencoe. Let's be honest, every small neglected town in America looks particularly the same, and this lack of uniqueness makes these places rank even lower on the beauty scale. As for this tiny Minnesota town, on top of looking generally ugly, Glencoe suffers from the worst kind of small town syndrome, exclusivity. Sitting at barely 5,600 people, you'd think these residents wouldn't act so high and mighty. Wow, this is just beating up on Glencoe here. A few former residents shared their experience on Niche, saying, if you haven't lived here your entire life, you're not accepted, and moved away about a year ago, best decision ever. You either need to be born there or know someone born there to be accepted. The residents are very self-absorbed and the schools are horrible. The kids treat the new people terribly and the schools do nothing about it. Another small place in Minnesota was famously dissed several years ago by then Washington Post reporter Christopher Ingram. Was Red Lake County, which he called the ugliest county in the United States, which is insane. That's actually a gorgeous county. And he said the worst place to live. He later moved there. It's unclear if the author of A Lot's Ugliest List will make the same decision to move to Glencoe. I'm going to just say this, and we see this with the Hilltop Township. That's the thing that Reardon over at the Star Tribune has been covering, that whole thing. No, the thing that is the dichotomy of these small towns is they resent the fact that people moved away and they wish people would stay and come back after college. They really upset about that. But then when someone moves there, there's a lot of small towns where the welcome wagon is. And you're not from here. God, I lived in Bemidji. Holy God, is that a nightmare. You have the three groups of people up there. You have the locals, you have the college kids, and the people that went to college at BSU and stayed. And then you have everyone else. And those lines do not cross. They are not very welcoming. And it just was the case. It's just that's kind of what a lot of small towns are like. So I don't know if necessarily you should gauge dogging on Glencoe just off of one website, though. But, you know, it is what it is. 952. Would you label Patrick Glencoe the ugliest city in Minnesota?
No.
No. Which one would you? Ooh, who would you name? Come on, give me names. Come on.
Let me think, because I do have some names on my mind, but I will.
Don't worry. Are they in the metro area?
No.
Okay. Well, then come on. There they go. Who, if Patrick was to name the ugliest city, I would say Effie is up there. I mean, because Effie is, you know, one gas station, six bars, half of them are closed, and a dilapidated church last time I was up there. So
I got to admit, I've never liked Rochester. I'm sorry, Rochester.
Oh, Rochester, I'll hold him. You hit him, okay? No. Rochester is nice. I like Rochester.
Never liked St. Cloud.
I'm okay with St. Cloud. I'm okay. There are some places. I can tell you this. If you're from the metro, and this is going to back you up. If you're from Minneapolis-St. Paul, Minneapolis-St. Paul kicks butt. Minneapolis-St. Paul is awesome. So it no matter where you go, it's going to be a little bit of a step down. I go to Duluth, it feels like it's a little bit of a step down up there. But, yeah, okay. I will inform the Rochester and St. Cloud Tourism Association of your thoughts. Direct all letters and postage to Patrick, courtesy of AM 950. Don't worry, I got your back.
I know.
As long as I'm not affected, then you're in trouble. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. So I want a little bit about what we talked about yesterday in regards to Minnetonka High School. And it sounded like there was an incident where one of the students yelled the N-word and "I wish you were dead" at some of the other students. And the basketball coach had resigned, and we're like, what's going on over here? This kind of came out of the blue. Now, I'm going to step back for a quick second before I get into this and make the following statement. Every day in Minnesota, I think there are probably at least one unfortunate racial incident a day in Minnesota in schools. But you don't hear about them, do you? No, you don't. Because the school district that it happens in handles the situation correctly. There is an appropriate punishment laid down to the person spewing the racism. There is a welcoming, safe environment attitude that's the victims. And people walk away. They don't shy away from it. They acknowledge it and they vow to be better. And they let the parents know about it. They let the community know about it. And there. When you see a school district like this, Prior Lake had their situation, blow up and it becomes a big issue. Usually something didn't happen. I might say it like this. Something didn't happen. You have the incident, and the next thing you know, you have protests, you have coaches resigning, you have whatever the case may be. And usually what hasn't happened here is one of two things. Either the school has frantically tried to sweep the incident under the rug, or they did like Anoka Hennepin did a few years ago, where they did the, it's protected speech. We can't stop the bullies from bullying gay kids to death because that's protected speech. Which, funny story, it's not protected speech. Hate speech is not protected speech. And that school district got sued and lost. And only then did all of a sudden the people who had been screaming, we need to make sure the bullies can bully anyone they want to death, were all of a sudden ran out of town. Because, you know, their policies had basically, their hate policies had led to a god-awful amount of kids committing suicide in that school district. Just an absolute travesty. And all of you people that were behind that, you're going to burn in hell. I'm just going to let you know, you're going to burn in hell. You're horrible human beings. Someone has to tell you, you're welcome. Now, that being said, it's either protected speech, that crap argument, which is basically endorsement of the bad speech, or it's sweeping under the rug. Now, I had an individual send me kind of a breakdown of what allegedly happened. Now, I'm going to make sure I'm very clear about this. I don't know who this person is. I don't know if these allegations are true. I'm not going to go through them verbatim. I'm going to touch on one or two of them. I actually, when I got this, and if you want to look at this, I actually on Twitter, when this person sent it, I initially posted this and then I pulled it back. I deleted it and I reposted that, okay, I'm a talk show host. I'm not in journalism. And so I linked to a bunch of journalists to have them take a look at it because this is more of a news story than it is me just, you know, the trained chimp talking about an issue. Now, I've got some questions about this because I can't believe by what some of the people have said that what is described here actually happened, because I can't comprehend Minnetonka School District was this stupid. And I'm dead serious. I can't comprehend it. So that is kind of why I believe. And as I was reading through this, I said, were they really that dumb to do this? And maybe there's some embellishing here. So I don't know what happened. I can tell you we're going to find out, because it does clearly feel as if there has been this has basically been, they're trying really hard to keep this under the rug. So the first thing that should be mentioned is that I had said how the coach, why is the coach resigning? And the coach, remember, the coach resigned because they were saying they were concerned about the safety of their family. Well, you find out The coach, basically, it was their child who is the alleged person who said the inappropriate thing. Now, some parenting advice, if I could. If you get that call and you said, holy God, your child said blank, holy God, you have a teachable moment. And no, your kid might not have to withdraw from the school. There's going to have to be a lot of apologizing and acquiescing, indeed. But they might not have to withdraw from the school. But you need to basically be the parent at that point and realize, holy gosh, I can't believe my kid said this. We need to apologize. I need to get my kid into some racial sensitivity courses. We need to make sure that we have a sit down, we have a discussion, apologies are made, and we move on. And that there's a punishment, if there's a suspension, whatever the case may be, that is accepted and said, I am sorry, I will serve my time. Doesn't sound like that's what happened here. I don't want to necessarily get into the, and I'm kind of scanning through the note that I got here. I don't want to necessarily get into what apparently there was an alleged punishment which didn't happen, it sounds like, with the kid that said the thing. One of the kids who was the subject of the racist attack was forced to sign a non-disclosure contract made by the school without any legal guardian being there or being told about the contract. Okay. So this is where I first say, what? I can't believe Minnetonka High School would have been that stupid, because I can tell you right now, if it was my kid and you took my kid and pulled them aside and made them sign a non-disclosure agreement to keep an incident quiet because you were absent, and myself as a parent or a legal representative like a lawyer wasn't present, the next day you would be hearing from my lawyer with a $20 million lawsuit for violating my child's rights. So this is kind of where I'm hesitant. I don't know what this story really is. The story that's told to me, I just cannot believe that Minnetonka High School would be that stupid to actually have a child without a parent or guardian there sign a non-disclosure agreement. I mean, that is so boneheaded stupid, it's not even funny. And so I have a hard time comprehending that actually happened, which they basically told the girl then, and then they were saying, the girl saying, I want to get out of this. They're saying, no, and if you talk about it, we're going to punish you, that sort of thing. The basketball coach, apparently the allegation here is said that to the varsity girls basketball team that they stay quiet on the situation that is happening or else there'd be serious consequences. Once again, it's not the crime, it's the cover-up, and that, you know, it sounds like the coach was, if this is true, that it was the coach's daughter, that was clearly they should have separated themselves from that whole situation right away because they couldn't be, you know, biased. That was on the 9th. On the 11th, they posted, well, apparently some kids posted what had happened online with, and they say they have some audio of some of the stuff, which led to the school, after being followed by many staff members, they took our backpacks down to the office and called us down and demanded that our cell phones unlocked to delete the posts that we had made. We are refused. They stated we are being suspended for defamation of character. Ah, that's always good. If that's true, you guys are massive idiots. I mean, seriously, you search someone's phone, private property, without a warrant. I'm going to guess you don't have a warrant because you're a school district and you're not Law and Order Minnetonka. This is, like I said, this is why I'm wondering how much of this the truthfulness there is to this story. But if this is true, holy God, how stupid could you be? And once again, now we're to the point where it sounds like the students who are the victims of the abuse are the ones who are getting punished, while the person who spewed the racism is, you know, she's a good kid. Yeah, whatever. I mean, that's at least the story I'm seeing. Needless to say, this is a mess. And Minnetonka, let me make sure I repeat for the record. If you had a child in your office and you had them sign a non-disclosure agreement without a parent or guardian or a legal representative there, and you did the search and seizure and demanded people delete stuff off their cell phones and stuff and refused to allow them to continue in school unless they did what you said, boy, you're idiots. That lawsuit's going to be big and it's going to cut deep. And you're going to have to acquiesce. Well, you're probably going to have to settle out of court for a massive amount of money just to make sure that you don't have to apologize or say how many things wrong you did. But if you did this, if that's what happened, may God have mercy on your soul, because you're wow, that's going to hurt and bad. I don't know what's happened. I have referred this note to journalists. They can do the research. I think some of this is probably, like a lot of stories, some of this has probably got a lot of truth to it. I will say today, Minnetonka, the students were going to step out and protest, and they were told by the teachers that if anyone went outside, they'd be suspended, there'd be punishment. Teachers weren't letting kids out of classrooms. Very Gestapo-like. At least that's the story I heard today. Because heaven forbid people actually protest the inappropriate behavior, the real crime. When you start treating the victims and the people angry about the original crime worse than the original criminal, you're going to have this blow up in your face. So I don't know what happened here. Like I said, I would be shocked if Minnetonka High School was this stupid to do the things that have been alleged that they had done. Because that lawsuit's going to be – that's going to be a big hit to your budget right there. But now that you – once again, reminder, there's two ways you can deal with this. The correct way, appropriate punishment for the student, apologies, it's a safe space, and you move on. Or you can try to cover it up, force kids to write, you know, to sign non-disclosure agreements and, well, watch chaos ensue. One works, one doesn't. Let me just put it that way. Allegedly. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Take a break. Come on back. A quick segment before we get to Stein when we do return. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. You know the day. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Like I said, I mean, when stuff like this happens, I always get stuff from people saying, here's what really happened, here's what really happened. And a lot of times you can tell it's fairly biased one way or the other. So I kind of always, when I get this quote unquote insider info, I always kind of take it with a grain of salt. I will say, talking to a few parents from Minnetonka, sounds like some of this, what was related to the, in this note, is true. Sound at least that at least their version of it. That's what they kind of had heard. You know, it's just like I said. It's, you know, you don't want to be that school district who sits there and says the most important thing we have to do is prevent anyone from finding out about this. Do you know what real leadership is? When you have a mistake, being able to, first of all, look in the mirror and saying, boy, we screwed up. We got to fix this. And then learning how to learn, to shut up and listen and learn. That's the real key. My daughter, I had one of my daughters said something inappropriate online a few weeks ago. And I actually had to sit down and talk with her and I said, you can't do this sort of thing. And it wasn't that, I mean, and she was upset because she felt like she was being picked on. I just said, no, this is to protect you. Now, what she said was nothing racist or anything like this. It was just kind of a joke that ended up kind of sounding a little threatening. But needless to say, it was kind of a moment where you can sit down and you have to explain to these kids, you just can't say stuff like this and think that this is okay in the real world. What are you teaching the kids at Minnetonka right now? Because I guarantee you the kids at Minnetonka are learning that basically that, you know, I guarantee you they're not learning any good life lessons right now. And true leadership, true respectable leadership is when you have a person who can basically say, all right, screw it up. Let's fix this. Let's not hide from it. That's not there. What do we do to make this right? And I understand, especially in conservative circles, there's a lot of people like, never apologize ever. Trust me, the true strength, the true leaders, the true honorable human beings are the ones can say, oops, I screwed up. Sorry. How do I fix it? That is leadership. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. And like I said, I'm not sure what exactly is right or wrong about this. I'm going to imagine, like I said, you can try to bury this, but this story is going to come on out, and it's going to get uglier and uglier, like the bell and the wheel, like the ventilation system in your school. I mean, there's other incidents as well that we've talked about. You know, their bigger concern seems to be hiding what happened as opposed to addressing it and showing, you know, hey, we can move past this. We can make a better student population. We can educate these kids. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. When we do return, one Jeffrey Stein joins us. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. I can't shut off
this stereo. Jeff.
AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Jeff Stein is our national and presidential expert, noted author. Find his books over at Next Chapter Books and TotallyIowa.com. The Iowa Business Report is his daily show that he does down there that you can find in at KXEL, as well as with the Iowa Politics Report, which we'll post a little bit later on today. Hi, Jeff.
So let me get this straight.
Yes.
If you apologize,
yes,
then you're a good person and forward thinking, correct?
Well, if you're guilty of the thing, I mean, if you screwed up, you know, you need to learn how to apologize for your own actions. Yes.
So how much of your daily program do you reserve for the apology section?
Oh, about a second hour. That's why we're 2 hours now. You know, it was overwhelming.
I thought it was the first 10 minutes. Oh, you do it on the back end of the show. Okay, well, now I understand. All right, that's all good.
One of the better parts of Fox or Saturday Night Live was the Fox News bit. They did the Fox and Friends in the morning, and they had to have their correction scroll and all the things they kept screwing up on. I'm the first to admit, I think I don't have any problem saying it. If I screw up, I'm screw up. And I've admitted I was wrong numerous times.
You do.
Yeah.
You do. But, you know, I mean, and I joke about the frequency. But no, I mean, you see, this is the difference. And you and I have talked about it. We may not agree on 100% of things. We may not. I don't even know what the percentage is. But if you biff, you say you biffed, and that's how you keep credibility. It's the lack of accountability and the lack of being willing to be accountable, and you just have no credibility. I don't care what the topic is.
Which brings – that's a good segue into what I want to first address, which is this is – we're radio pros here.
Not my rodeo, buddy.
Okay, so I – on Monday – started getting bombarded by writers who are talking, why aren't you talking about the John Durham story? John Durham story. Why aren't you talking about the John Durham? This is the biggest crime that's ever happened. And I'm like, is it? So I'm going to read out of Charlie Savage's, who, by the way, himself has been savagely attacked because of this article. But I'm going to read two segments here. And forgive me if this is a little wrong. I want to read them both here. When John Durham, the Trump-era special counsel investigating the inquiry into Russia's 2016 election interference, filed a pretrial motion on Friday night, he slipped a few extra sentences that set off a fervor among right-wing outlets about purported spying on former President Donald Trump. But the entire narrative appeared to be mostly wrong or old news, the latest example of the challenge created by the barrage of similar conspiracy theories from Mr. Trump and his allies. Upon closer inspection, those narratives are often based on a misleading presentation of the facts or outright misinformation, a.k.a. lies. They also tend to involve obscure issues, so dissecting them requires asking readers to expend significant mental energy and time, raising the question of whether news outlets should even cover such claims if they're intent on, you know, reporting them fairly. He goes on later and says, the press refuses to even mention the major crime that took place, said Mr. Trump. Mr. Trump said in a statement on Monday, this in itself is a scandal. The fact that a story so big, so powerful, and so important for the future of our nation is getting zero coverage from lamestream all over the world. There are many problems with this. For one, much of it was not new. We're talking about the story. This is getting back to Savage talking about the story that was broke. The New York Times had reported in October what Mr. Sussman had told the CIA about data suggesting Russian-made smartphones called Yoda phones had been connecting to networks at Trump Tower and the White House, among other places. The conservative media also skewered the fact that what the filing had actually said. For example, Mr. Durham's filing never used the word infiltrate. It never claimed that Mr. Joff's company was being paid by the Clinton campaign, two things which have become fact on right-wing media about this. Most important, contrary to the reporting, the filing never said the White House data that came under the scrutiny was from the Trump era. According to lawyers from David Dagon, a Georgia Institute of Technology data scientist who helped develop the Yoda analysis, so-called DNS logs, which are records of when computers or smartphones have prepared to communicate with other servers on the internet, the time that the Yoda phones were connected was during Obama's presidency. So there is no there. I mean, this was a planted story by, clearly by Durham to kind of give Trump some red meat. But, you know, once you look at the story, as much as Republicans want to scream that this is the biggest story in the history of mankind, there's no there.
Okay, slightly different take with regard to what you said at the end about Durham planting something, okay? And this comes from, again, Me as a defense attorney by trade.
Yes.
The prosecution in documents always, and what's Durham's role here? His role is as a prosecutor. Okay. They always assert items and call them facts. Because if they did not assert them as facts, there is no indictment, there are no charges. So, for example, a prosecutor might say, the state of Minnesota alleges that Matt McNeil on this date did this, and in so doing, he did this, this, and this. Now, Matt McNeil may look at that and say, nuh-uh, the technical legal phrase, nuh-uh, but the prosecutor asserts them as a factual set, or they call it a statement of facts, okay? To my understanding, all Durham did was put in a pleading a statement of facts that in the law you understand are assertions. Now, a prosecutor is not supposed to make assertions without some fundamental foundation for it. Evidence, hello, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that's for the jury to decide later. So
you're
to
fair.
My knowledge,
okay.
All I'm saying is this. Everybody take a chill, okay? Because obviously the folks on the right said, see, vindication. All it is an assertion in a pleading.
Now,
and it's those same Republicans who, when there's a pleading against their guy, says that it's manipulated facts. You cannot have that both ways.
But Savage is calm. Now, you're right to call me out on one thing. Durham might not have alluded to this in the filing for the way it came. But Savage's own reporting on this shows he didn't say any of this. He never said the Clinton campaign was paid. I mean, the story is now a lawyer that was working for the Clinton campaign was spying on the Trump White House. One, mm-hmm. that Durham never said that the Clinton campaign was involved. Two, there was no spying. He never he said infiltrate or anything like that. Three, we already knew about the Yoda phones. And then the most important part, the little bit of a misinterpretation is the data to here isn't even the Trump administration. It was the Obama administration. I think the right wing would have a field day with the idea of Hillary Clinton spying on Obama, but the entire, there's no there. I mean, I understand what you're saying, and granted that Durham is not necessarily saying any of this in his statements,
but
the right wing media, has clearly made up a story off of this that is saying definitives that are just not true. And once again, there is no story here outside of a minor few words from Durham in a note that didn't really imply anything of what's being reported.
And that's the whole point. The point is the prosecutor put something in a pleading, period. That's it. Okay. You could say, well, Mr. Durham, where's your evidence? And his response would be, I'll see you in court. I mean, because he doesn't have to justify what he puts in the pleading until court. And so these people who have seized on this little bit, here's another distinction that I'll make. Let's say, for example, again, it's the state versus Matt McNeil. Matt McNeil is found not guilty. That's not the same as being innocent. That's not the same as complete vindication.
Mm-hmm.
You were found not guilty. That doesn't mean that there wasn't something. It means that those particular charges. So in other words, they're not synonymous terms. So you cannot just say someone in a criminal pleading put certain things that they call statements of fact, because that's the term of art that's used, and you can't then say, see, I've been completely vindicated. There is no logical nexus or connection.
Well,
whatsoever.
Similar to the Potter trial they had up here, the shooting of Dante Wright. I mean, she was found guilty, but if she was found to be innocent because it was just determined to be an accident, doesn't mean Dante Wright's not dead. Doesn't mean that there wasn't an exactly. So your point.
I'm going to interrupt you because you misspoke by accident. She was found guilty.
Yes.
She never would have been found innocent. See, the term of art.
Yes.
And that's why we fall into it, right? The term of art, and I didn't mean to be a jerk about it, but that's the fundamental point. If she had been found not guilty, the individual's still dead. Absolutely. It also doesn't mean that she was innocent. Mm-hmm. It just meant that there would not have been. So again, you have people for their own gain taking terms of art in legal documents and twisting them. And again, to my earlier point, when it's a quote-unquote Democrat prosecutor, and they're putting these against Republicans, then it's like, well, they're lying throughout all these documents. Same process. You can't have credibility. Hello, now we're back to the earlier conversation. You can't have credibility if you spin it one way when it's to your advantage and spin it the other way when it's not.
Okay, and so, but once again, Durham is not saying any of this. This is a completely fabricated story, which brings up the next point I want to bring up about this whole thing. The Republican Party has learned from Trump. They really have. Trump, you know, and I'm paraphrasing, I don't know if this actually did happen, but like he insults World War I veterans, and to get the media off that, he goes out there, drops trowel, and moons the entire audience saying, hey, he mooned him from the front. He was always good at making something far more outrageous happen to take his unacceptable behavior off the front page. He was very good.
It's deflection.
Yes.
And I want to hear your Trump impression of what he would say as he drops Trump.
It looks like a full moon tonight. Ooh.
Thank you. All right. I'm good. That's all I needed for the day.
Hey, Melania, I don't need to wear glasses to stare at this object. Anyway, no, I'm sorry. God, jeez. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Always one too far.
All right.
Always one too far.
The Republican Party, I mean, let's face it, when it comes to Trump, which they have clearly become betrothed to him at this point. Trump is flushing documents down the toilet. He's eating some of them. The allegations are coming on out here. His accounting firm has basically said we can't trust any of the numbers that are coming from his own kids now. There was that ruling that comes out. Now they can be held accountable for misusing of funds. There's investigations heading on in. All over the place. It is closing in on him. Of course, January 6th, they're getting, you know, those teeth are getting sharper and sharper at this point. This is a way for them. When you look at this whole Durham story, it's a manufactured story, probably by the Republican Party, probably by Republican operatives, fed to right-wing media. Because what was the narrative that the right-wing media went with? Not so much the fake story they made up, but why is no one else covering this? Well, because everyone else saw this was a joke and there wasn't anything there. They were trying desperately to get the bad news about Trump off the front page. I don't think it succeeded this time because, like I said, there has to be some there.
Well, again, it's sort of like you kill your parents and then want sympathy because you're an orphan. You know, you create a story and then you're complaining because nobody bought, nobody bit, you know, when you toss the line into the lake. I mean, it's at the very least, it was premature. We don't know what evidence actually comes out. And so what did the defendant do? Filed an objection to the statement of facts.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, it's called a process. This is what you're going to have. Now, the one thing I would tell you is, well, I'll just ask you first.
Yeah.
Do you think Hillary Clinton was right to even issue a statement?
I mean, it's like when Republicans say, Democrats say, I better do what the Republicans say or else they'll be mean to me. They're going to be mean to you anyway. So, you know, just ignore them and go do what you want to do. If I was to make an argument, I think she released that statement for Fox News specifically, not OAN or Newsmax or any of the other troll factories, but for Fox News specifically because I think she does kind of still look – and some of the Democrats, I don't know if this is right or wrong, still look at Fox News as a bit of a legit news outlet. But I think that was why she did, was she was, you know, kind of still considering them, I'm going to release this mainly for you, which they promptly ignored.
Well, she cited them in it. You know, she actually mentioned Trump and Fox News creating this. And, you know, and I'm just like, is that really helpful? Because, again, what will you do if you're on the right? You'd say, oh, see, we got under her skin. Okay, great. I mean, it's such a sideshow.
Well,
and that's the problem with it, because if anything that Durham put in statement of facts in that pleading comes to pass, it can't possibly measure up to this the histrionics that we've heard since. And so it's really kind of defeating their own purpose, is it not?
It's to a point, though. It's they got the message out to the people they wanted to get it to. It's like when when the Border Patrol agents were whipping the migrants on the border, and I had Republicans say to me, "Well, there's no one's whipping anyone," and I said, "I posted the video showing the guys whipping them," and they're like, "Well, that's a bridle, that's not a whip." I'm like, "Oh, for God's sakes, yeah, this is," and so am I supposed to say you were bridling them? Is that what it is? Well, it's not fair to call it whipping. And it's just it's like, you know, the people on the right that want this to be true, it's Hillary's emails, all that stuff, all over, lock her up. That's all it is. And then they feel as if they're the victims because no one else is covering it. So, yeah, it's kind of pathetic. And it really is kind of pathetic. I'll tell you what, let's take a break. When we come on back here, I want to talk about your legal thoughts on the alternate delegates. How much trouble are these guys really in? 952-946-6205. Jeff Stein joining us. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Well, two things running quick. Democrat of the day is going to be Jason Isaacson, senator from District 42. We'll have him. It sounds like he's, after redistricting, he's now going to have to face off against Senator Marty. So we'll have to talk about that. Also, the AM 950 Wordle, three letters of the day, OXS. OXS. Get your words in by calling Patrick over at 952-946-6205 or making a post up on the live streams at AM 950 and Progressive Citizen X Matt McNeil Show, both of those on Facebook. Jeff Stein joining us, talking politics. So, Jeff, there is an interesting turn here. Now, obviously, they're still going after all the guys that stormed the Capitol. And they clearly are building up a lot of information about – you know, Trump, and especially the relationship with some of these, either the campaign or the administration's relationship with some of these, you know, less than stellar groups that were there on 1-6. But one of the things that's been really interesting in the last week is how the 1-6 Commission has really zeroed on these alternate electors that basically presented themselves as duly elected, appropriated electors. I guess that would be the right term. That with official letterhead, state letterhead, saying they were supposed to be here. And the reality is just because they used the letterhead, they presented themselves the way they did, they are in – it sounds like they're in a heap of legal trouble. I mean, am I right on that? I mean, are these people really looking at the fact that, okay, no, you can't do this on your own? You just can't have some guy in Des Moines say, oh, well, I don't agree with the electors for Iowa. I'm just going to send my own electors over because and do it on official letterhead. And with official channels, because I think – didn't they all submit these electors to the National Archives or something like that?
Well, what they're doing is they're saying they're the alternate electors. And so had the state vote gone a different way, they are the slate. And so, you know, you're not impersonating an official because of the fact that, you know, you're the slate that would have served. And if it's overturned, then you're in line. I mean, it's.
But if they presented themselves, okay, so if their state went for Joe Biden, well, then the electors are set. At that point, if they presented themselves as the official electors in any capacity, which they did, that sounds like that's where they're getting into their legal problem, is that it's a little niche. I'm going to be the first to say, yeah, you put it on official letterhead, you submitted it through official channels. But you basically knew at that point you weren't the official electors. You were hoping you would be allowed to be the electors, but you presented yourself falsely with legal precedent. And I think that's where they're in trouble.
It's premature display of credentials.
Yeah.
And therefore, you're doing it. Well, what's your purpose for doing it? Is your purpose for doing it to confuse those who are accepting credentials, so that you can then cause mayhem, if that's your goal? See, this is where intent makes a difference. If it's simply, I'm just sitting here waiting in case I get called, that's one thing. If you show up and assert that you are the rightful owner of this privilege and you're doing it to subvert others, you're doing it, that allows you then, that does make it that you are impersonating or it's identity theft in that respect. Okay, you're claiming that you're with authority. You're not an elected official, but it's the same sort of thing. You know, sitting there saying, "No, I am the governor. Just look at this piece of paper." You know, yeah. I mean, that's where it goes a little far. Yeah.
Well, okay, and here's the problem: it's like I think, okay, I'll give you some leeway. Say it was just Arizona. It was a bunch of guys that, you know, we decided we got a little out of control. We were jumped the gun. I think they'd let it go. Here's where they run into the real big problem is it sounds like this 1-6 committee has got actual evidence that there was a coordination to do this through Giuliani, other lawyers with the campaign. The wording is all the same, basically, in all these documents. So clearly someone was coordinating this. And as you said, if there was intent – which then, I mean, clearly they might just be going after the delegates to the fraud delegates to basically say, who told you to do this? Because that's the person we really want. But the reality is, as you said, the intent becomes clear once you realize this might have been coordinated at the top level.
There would be no problem with coordination at any level and having people standing in the wings. OK, it's the taking it the next step and presenting credentials, asserting that you have authority you don't have. That's the trick. And so, again, what did those coordinating it actually say? Did they actually say, you need to go there, you need to, you know, get in ahead of the other guys, give them an elbow in line? And again, what's the point of even going there other than a show?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, none of it makes a lot of sense. And here's the thing with a lot of the coordination, I know we're up against it. Here's the thing with a lot of the coordination. It's sort of like, wouldn't it be cool if we got all these people together and then for what, a photo op?
Yeah.
I mean, there was no ultimate purpose to be had, and that has nothing to do with the rest of the stuff on 1-6. What's the point of having these people stand there in front of a locked door?
Well, then how many people have they arrested on mail fraud? Let's remember that one, too. Jeff Stein, once again, I'll post the Iowa Politics Report later. Hour 2 is coming up next. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show on your Wednesday. Matt and Patrick here. Once again, Patrick, still getting a lot of entries in, especially in the Facebook feeds today. Thank you very much for the AM 950 Wordle. The three letters that have to be in your word in order are O as in October, X as in X-ray, S as in Sierra. If your word has that, you will be entered in. At the end of this hour, we will pick one winner, and that person will get themselves an AM 950 calendar. Good luck on that. Once again, I'm enjoying this. There are so many words I completely forget about. It's great to get all the entries. Thank you very much on that. Democrat of the day is the senator from the north side of the metro, Jason Isaacson, District 42. He's kind enough to join us today about the last few years. Hey, Senator, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
I had no idea I was getting this illustrious title of Democrat of the Day. That's awesome.
Well,
I put that on my wall or something.
It's not a formal declaration. I mean, it's.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure. You know, taking victories where I can get them.
Well,
so,
no,
thank you for having me today.
My pleasure, and thank you. I want to actually. The reason why I'm having you on is I saw that video that you went after Chamberlain in the Senate hearing. On, I guess it was a critical race theory. And what I love about that video is you did what you should have done, which is you started bringing up what the people were testifying about. And the fact that you brought that up, all of a sudden, Chamberlain didn't want you bringing that up in a specific manner that didn't make his point. And he quickly tried to shut you down. And you're like, I'm just referring to what the people, the testimony we had.
That's right.
Yeah,
I wasn't even going to go like all in on them unless they did something crazy. And, you know, that bar wasn't set very high, apparently, because they immediately talked about things like, if you can even imagine this said by an adult in our society, that words like diversity and equity are divisive in our classrooms and shouldn't be taught. And it was a testifier for Paul Gazelka. And I said, you know, that's kind of crazy. Paul, and I said, is this where you stand with it? And of course, he didn't want to answer that question. It was unbelievable that they're not only saying these kind of crazy things, but they're attempting to make them sound like they're normal and mainstream, which has kind of been their stick, right? They say crazy things very civilly and hope that you won't call them out for it. And I pretty much make my living doing just that in the Senate because it's a very target-rich environment.
Well, and they try to be so folksy. Have you ever thought about looking at them and saying, you guys know anyone can homeschool their child if they don't like what's going on in the schools? Yeah. Anyone can homeschool their child in the state of Minnesota. It's very easy to do. Why are we basically trying to say parents can kick open the doors and order teachers what to do?
Well, you know, first of all, we can't bother them with facts because that would get in the way of the argument. Second of all, which is the truth. But the second thing is that, you know, I think we have to be really honest about what these things are. There has been a brewing battle for a long time between the Chamber and Education Minnesota, who represents the most amazing group. I'm a member of it, the Teachers of Minnesota. And I have to tell you that, you know, these are all different angles they take to attack it because they can't just win it outright. And so they try to chip it away. It's here, it's chip away there. They do it with tier licensing. You know, they want to stop the union from being successful. And the bottom line is, if I'm going to take a real serious and very clear stab at solving our problem with education, the first person I should be talking to is the people who are exercising that education, and that's our teachers. And that's never in their line of sight on how they want to solve problems, and it's pretty frustrating.
By the way, we had Denise Precht on yesterday from Education Minnesota. Exactly. It just is this war on teachers. It's not good, and I get it. They get excited about it because they basically can rile up their base, but the reality is they're damaging education, and they're lying because, once again, any parent in the state of Minnesota can homeschool your child. If you don't like to go to school, you can just homeschool them, and you can kind of dictate the curriculum as you see fit. They just don't want to, so yeah.
I was going to say, for those at home that are listening, when you're watching this stuff happen at the Capitol and it seems confusing, just put the lens on of how can I attack public teachers and how can I attack education in a way that makes it a way the far right can raise money and attack unions. That's really what the motivation seems to be a lot of these times. And, you know, it isn't just in this area. Just earlier on the floor, that same day, Senator Gazelka was promoting a bill that would put $1 million into a fundraising account for recruiting more police officers. And I'd asked the question, you know, maybe what we should do is spend $1 million training police officers for the they actually have that might cause them more people to want to be there. Why don't you improve the job rather than taking out some billboards? And his response to me was, let's have all hands on deck and recognize this is a crisis. Let's remember, this is all hands on deck. The state's in trouble. And I said, with all due respect, Senator Gazelka, we were in crisis and it was all on deck when black men were being murdered by our police, period. And that's where we're at. And that was a failure of your leadership, and you're not willing to go down that path and solve those problems. So now here we are trying to recruit more police officers when really we had this problem a long time ago. And under your leadership, we just didn't do anything about it.
I don't want to overstep my bounds, but Senator, every time these guys talk about police and law, the first thing out of any DFLer's mouth should be, by the way, can we make it illegal for anyone who's a white supremacist, a Nazi, or a member of the KKK being a police officer in Minnesota? Can we get that on the law books now? Every single time they will refuse to do it. But that I guarantee you that all of a sudden, if they basically have to sit there and constantly say, we're not going to vote on that, well, it's going to damage. I can't understand these people.
Right.
Yeah, I got to bring up something, though. You are the ranking minority member of the redistricting committee in the Senate.
Yes, sir.
Redistricting happened yesterday.
Yes, it did.
Yes. And if I'm not mistaken, now, you, friend of the show, big fan of yours, you're there. Are you still in 42 after this redistricting, or has John Marty joined you in 42, or have you joined him in his district?
Well, you know what? It turns out John Marty and I are now in a new district called Senate District 40. And John and I had a really nice talk last night. We're friends. We've worked together. He's been very helpful for me in my career. And it turns out we're in the same district, and we're both committed to running. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I put my announcement out earlier today, and I'm running full speed because, in my mind, this is about the future and looking at what's next. And we have so many things. If you hear my dog in the background, I apologize.
No bias.
We have so many things that we have to do to protect education, to protect our environment. You know, I'm having a bill coming out later this year that's going to say everything the government does going forward has to go through the lens of climate change and how it affects us. If we don't start taking this seriously, it's going to be a real problem down the road. It already is a real problem. And so really, there's a lot of things we have left to do. I'm working on some pretty serious mental health bills to try to create an urgency room for people that are in mental health crisis in our room, and not only have a problem and be in a stressful place, but be exposed to other folks who might be sick. Let's put them in a situation that actually works to help them rather than exasperate the problems. And so, you know, I'm really energized by that, and it's exciting. And the new district looks like a lot of fun. And John and I have really committed ourselves. We're going to abide by the endorsement, and we're going to work to have a very pleasant, open, honest discussion about the issues and let the delegates decide who they want. And I'm pretty excited. The of what's going on, and the feedback I've been getting from the district so far has been amazing.
I'm gonna be honest. I love you both. You're both fantastic. It's a crime that I want both of you in St. Paul. I want both. I mean, if we can figure out some way to get both of you in St. Paul, we'll be better for that. All my best on that, and by all means, good luck on that. I know that Thank you and Senator Marty, that there's going to be a fantastic senator out of that district. I was looking at the redistricting yesterday, and I know the DFL has not been the most forthright, but I was looking at the maps and saying, okay, I see 58 fairly solid DFL seats in the metro area alone. Duluth, Rochester, St. Cloud, Moorhead. We had Heather Keeler on yesterday from Moorhead, the seat there. I saw 29 relatively safe metro area Senate seats. And I keep saying to myself, okay, I know the Republicans are acting like, oh, this is not a bad map. The writing's on the wall. They have to kind of sweep to kind of win. I'm not saying we don't take it lightly. I'm not saying we don't campaign like everything's on the line, because it is.
Right.
But these redistricting maps look like they do favor the DFL.
Well, I think that what I try to point out to people is that, you know, they created more swing districts than they had before, right? And so there's some challenging areas that we have to be careful about and really be thoughtful about the way we're going to campaign. But I think what's been really exciting is watching our Senate caucus come together and really kind of putting the big picture in front of us of what we've got to do and work as a team, you know? And so it's made these moments so, like, you know, even though I'm paired with Marty, we're both eyes are on the prize of what's next to get a majority, regardless of which one of us is there. And there are some really unique pickup opportunities for us in Rochester, you know, in different parts of the suburbs and exurbs. I think there's some real opportunity there, and I feel really good about what Senator Putnam brings to the table in St. Cloud. He's got a lot of support there and a district that I think he'll do well in. Senator Kent Eakin, of course, in Moorhead, along with Representative Keeler, I think they really represent that area well and carry a lot of weight with folks there, even though, you know, his district wins for Trump, but he continues to win because he's authentic and real, and the people respect that. And I think that's what we've got to do with these maps, is really focus on how do we bring a message to people that they're actually concerned about and not let ourselves get washed up in the national, you know, craziness that's happening and how the media kind of hypes a lot of that stuff at the national level. Let's stay focused on what here is good for Minnesota. Another thing I point out is, you know, the suburbs are the majority of our population now. Right. And so we have to be really thoughtful about where we're placing our candidates and how we're going to work and what we want to focus on. And I think there's some real opportunity for us to genuinely keep the House, take the Senate, and then start making some good changes for Minnesota.
And I don't want to speak out of turn. I will say this. I was looking at some of the districts as you talk about swing districts. I see that for far more for the GOP. I mean, Osmek seats is going to be a nightmare for him to try to hold on to. He's got now Southern Plymouth.
Yeah.
Isaacson is in big trouble. That district is now a much more metro area. There are a lot of seats. I'm not saying that it's all, you know, slam dunks. I mean, Julia Coleman's seat is definitely more blue than it was, but it still is probably a 50-50 seat. But, I mean, it does seem like the Republicans did, because of what happens with redistricting when you have a large metro area, things moved in towards the core.
Well, and they had a lot of combinations because they just didn't have population in greater Minnesota where they were. They have four different districts that have matched incumbents, not counting their retirements, right? And let's talk about the Osmek seat for a second.
Yeah.
I mean, it's his worst-case scenario. He's up against Ann Johnson Stewart, who is simply a juggernaut. She is one of the most amazing, talented, and really, truly most authentic human beings I've ever met. And you just can't go wrong with her as your candidate, and I think that puts Osmek in a tough place. I wonder if he even runs.
I don't think he is. I agree.
It's going to be amazing.
I agree with you. I wonder if he's going to send in his, just decide not to run again, because he went from an area, and I've been out to Western Hennepin County where he was is there, and that's changed. I mean, Southern Plymouth, you know, 10 years ago was a kind of a swing district. Now that's a pretty solid blue vote. And so that's a tough haul for him. He's not going to get back in there I just don't think he can win that district.
And when Ann flipped that seat, right, from Senator Anderson, she flipped it by a lot, you know, and I think that's going to be part of the problem that Senator Osmek's going to have to realize, is that she's popular and maybe the hardest working human being I know. And so that's going to be amazing. And her experience is kind of a double threat, you know, as a woman in the suburbs who's a professional that owns a business and an engineer. Oh, my gosh. Not only that, but she's got a great Twitter game. You can check it out. She loves wonderful videos from her projects on the road, and it's just pretty amazing.
Oh no, I can't make an official call on that race quite yet. I gotta have a few more months before I can do that.
Let's let the people vote. But I hear what you're saying, and I appreciate your optimism there. It's pretty awesome.
As we say goodbye to District 42 here, you do have one session left here. Let's talk about what do you want to champion for 42 in this last session that you're going to be dealing with before the election?
Well, thank you for asking, because I'm really focused with Representative Mueller, who does some amazing work in the House. If you ever get a chance to talk with her, she's spectacular. We're trying really hard to get ourselves some funding, bonding funding for a new firehouse around Lake Turhanda that's going to serve three of the cities. But more importantly, it's going to have contracts to serve throughout the state where needed, and we'll have a hazmat facility for disinfecting. And so this is a really important part of the infrastructure cog, and we're excited about including that. It's in the governor's budget, and that's one of my big focuses. And the other thing is just making sure my constituents are taken care of. Mental health is an issue. This whole bill I had about an emergency room for people who are in mental health crisis comes from a story of my constituents. It literally is the purest way bills are made, when a constituent comes to you with a problem and you find a way to solve it. And that's what we're doing there. So there's a couple of really important things. And finally, I'd be remiss if I didn't say fully funding education. We just cannot be lax on that anymore. Minnesota is a great state because we educate our people, and we educate them well. And that needs to continue if Minnesota hopes to continue to be an amazing state to live in.
One final thing I want to talk about. You are on mining and forestry as well. You're on that committee.
Oddly enough, I am.
Yeah, well, but it gives you a great insight here. I mean, there have been a lot of changes here. I can tell you the idea of these mines by the Boundary Waters is a bad idea. And I think that now that these are kind of being put to rest, your thoughts on this? I mean, this you're feeling, I'm presuming, like this is the right way to go to make sure that the nature up there is preserved.
Listen, Minnesota is flush in water. Right. And one of the, I think, natural wonders of the world for me is up in the BWCA. And it's just not acceptable to be mining up there. I don't think it is. Well, unless we have the science that proves it, which we don't, I don't imagine why we would do that. And so for me, you know, protecting water up there is of paramount importance. President Biden, I think, did the right thing. And we're going to continue pushing to make sure that we limit that environmental impact as we move forward. I understand the argument of needing those precious metals to do a lot of the things we want to do with green energy, but we've got to figure out a way to do that in a way that doesn't take us out of our environment in the first place, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the problem. We've got to protect that water. That is a national treasure up there that cannot be messed with.
Oh, I tell you the truth. It's like I want you in St. Paul. You're just a fantastic senator. You represent the people very well. I want you in St. Paul. I can say this about John Marty too. I love him too. I mean all my best. I'm glad you guys talked. I'm glad you guys talked, and I'm glad you guys are working this out. All my best in the primary. We'll see what happens there. I will make sure, for the record here, John Marty is more than welcome to come on the show as well as the Democrat of the day if you'd like to. But I will give you that. I will give you the opportunity here. If people would like to find out more about your campaign specifically, what's the website so people can go to?
My last name, Isaacson, Isaacson, 4SD40.com, FORSD40.com. And that's my website. And come and check it out and interact with me. Let me know. As I tell everybody, give me a call and yell at me. I'm always happy to listen, right? We don't get enough of that. And I want to hear what people are thinking and find out how I can be a better champion for our progressive values.
You are always welcome on this show. In any capacity, Senator, you are always welcome on the show. Isaacson, Isaacson, FORSD40.com. That's going to be the new campaign site for Senator Jason Isaacson. Senator, thank you very much. I appreciate you being Democrat of the Day today.
Thank you so much. I'm going to go upstairs and brag to my wife that just happened. It's going to be awesome.
I'll send her a note if you need me to, sir. Senator Isaacson. And once again, I posted his rant against Chamberlain saying, you know, doing exactly what they brought on all these people that were trying to scare people into their point of view. When he started just quoting what they and holding them accountable for it, they freaked out because he was exposing them for the fraud that they were. And they tried to shut him up. And there is nothing I liked better than watching Isaacson make Chamberlain upset. Oh, you pansy. Chamberlain. Okay. Enough about that clown. Let's take a break. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Once again, thank you to Senator Isaacson. Spotlight him, spotlight Stein. We're going to be doing all that. There you go. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Once again, OXS is our AM 950 Wordle word of the day, or it's not the word, but you have to have a word with have O, X, and S in them, and then you might win yourself a calendar. You still have about a half an hour to get in on that, so by all means, give Patrick a call at 952-946-6205 with that word O, X, S. Or you can go and post it up on the live streams at AM 950 Radio, either at AM 950 Radio on Facebook or Progressive Citizen X Matt McNeil Show on Facebook. Yeah, interesting on Twitter right now. Also, I don't know what happened, but I'm getting a bunch of crypto guys that are posting and sending me, you know, giving me notifications for crypto. Dude, what the? Also, I just want to the person named Lily, whose Twitter handle is Lily80930904, who's got no followers and isn't following anyone else. Could that be a troll? I don't know. How do you not have anyone? Doesn't Twitter give you a sympathy follow? Just themselves? It'll give you an ESPN. There you go. ESPN is following you. There you go. Patrick. You live up in the North Metro, right? At least in the north side of town?
I used to, not anymore.
Where are you at? Where are you at now?
Oh, I'm actually just about 10 minutes from here.
You sleeping on the couch upstairs. I've worked in – trust me, I've slept at a radio station before. I've worked in this industry. Okay, it's about 10 minutes away. How much traffic do you have? Any, really?
Not really, but my travel patterns also don't really take me at rush hour. I'm usually on the road, you know, before noon. I'm out of here usually after 7, so.
Yeah. I'm probably the worst thing on the roads when I'm driving, so look out, people. Here I come. I worked, I don't know if you know or not, for many years I worked at Metro Traffic. I was a traffic reporter in town starting in, 2001? Ugh, I was there, and I was traffic. I used to fly at a Flying Cloud airport there and a Beechcraft 2-seater sport, which was just god awful. It was cool because I was doing a job where there's probably 300 people on the entire freaking planet doing that job in any given day. I mean, it's not a job a lot of people have. I was an airborne traffic reporter. That was kind of cool. It was great cocktail party information sort of way to groundbreaker there. One of the things that always upsets me about, you know, we talked about Mike Max and his comments about the city. There's the people that want to bash on your town. There's one of the things that they always say is, traffic is so bad here. Why would anybody live here? Traffic is so bad, right? That's kind of a recurring thing they give. I got news for you. Minneapolis drivers lost nearly an entire day to traffic last year. Oh, my God. But we still have it better than before the pandemic. We're spending less time in traffic, especially during traditional commute times, as many people continue to work from home. Congestion during the morning and evening rush hours has dropped 20% compared to 2019. I can see that. I especially say that when I leave here after the show, I see a pretty swift drive there and not too much problem. Overall, congestion levels in North America were down 14% in 2021 compared to 2019. Additional peak hours, top traffic was down, 31%. Minneapolis, the total time spent in traffic last year was up 1% from 2020 to 23 hours, but it's still down 7% from 2019. Change in traffic patterns could be one of the lasting trends of the pandemic. I could see that. I think a lot of people are going to be from here on out working from home, that will not change. But, you know, I there's already people out there that are saying, well, Matt, still an entire day wasted in your car. Dude, we got it easy. We've got it easy. New York City, every year, 80 hours in your car. 80 hours. Gosh, yeah, that's 3 days, more than 3 days in your car in New York City. In L.A., it's 75 hours. How is New York worse than L.A.? God, I was in L.A. L.A. is a freaking nightmare as it comes to traffic. And have you ever driven in L.A.?
I have not as an adult anyway.
Oh, my God.
I actually did have a story about this if you want to do
it. Please enlighten me.
So a couple years ago, I was in Seattle, and I drove from Seattle down to Olympia, which is about a mile drive. 2 hours and it wasn't even really rush hour. And I said, I will never complain about Twin Cities traffic again after that.
You got to go past SeaTac. And you got to go down there. By the way, in Olympia, there is a Mexican restaurant in Olympia, Washington, which is magnificent. Magnificent. If you ever have to get off after, you need to eat after that. No, I've done that. I've done that run from Portland up to Seattle, too. God, that is a nightmare sometimes. That is a nightmare. So where do we fall on the list? We are the 16th biggest metropolitan area in the United States of America. We have the 73rd worst traffic. So all these people that come out and say, traffic is so bad. We are, how are we even that doesn't even make sense we're that good. All these people, if they're complaining about traffic, then that's on them. Because we are the 73rd worst, city for this, which means we don't really have a problem. Columbus, Ohio, Austin, Texas, all of these other towns have much worse problems than we do. Ugh. We are the 395th globally for the cities. How about that? Top 400 traffic. God, what would be the worst? Would it be Mexico City would be the worst? I'm going to actually guess it's probably somewhere in Southeast Asia because those cities are massive and there's just so many people in a very tight area.
I would, some people might be surprised. I would think of maybe something like an East African city that doesn't really have the same
infrastructure.
Yeah.
Brazil, in Brazil, you get Rio, you can get carjacked about five times on your morning commute. It's more, I think what happens is you get carjacked in Rio de Janeiro and then you get out and then carjack the next person. Eventually you'll get to work. Maybe you might even get your car back. You never know. It's a roll of the dice. Welcome to Rio. Yee. Minneapolis, St. Paul kicks ass. End of story. End of discussion. Minneapolis, St. Paul kicks ass. Yes. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. The developments in the Republican scandal. Ooh, tell me more, Matt. Well, after the commercial break. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Oh, Agent Orange, nice. They can make things worse for me. Sometimes I'd rather die. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. By the way, in case you missed my little point during the Stein chat, John Durham, this whole story, when your Republican friends start talking about spying on the White House, Trump, oh my God, biggest story ever. All you need to do is go find Charlie Savage's New York Times story. But, you don't even need that. What you need to do is just go to them and say, by the way, do you know that these allegations actually apply to the Obama administration? Not. Oh, Agent Orange. Nice. They can make things worse for me. Sometimes I'd rather die. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. By the way, in case you missed my little point during the Stein chat, John Durham, this whole story, when your Republican friends start talking about spying on the White House, Trump, oh my God, biggest story ever. All you need to do is go find Charlie Savage's New York Times story. But you don't even need that. What you need to do is just go to them and say, by the way, do you know that these allegations actually apply to the Obama administration, not the Trump administration? And they're going to look at, biggest story ever? Oh, it's so, it's delicious. 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 Watching Republicans and their whole narratives just blow up in their face. Oh, it's just delightful. Same thing, can I say this about, once again, and I understand every Republican I'm going to talk, or every Republican, every Democrat I'm going to talk to in regards to the redistricting is going to be like, we're taking nothing for granted. We're taking nothing for granted. And that's fine. And that is fine. And nor should anyone. I don't care which district you're in. Don't take it for granted. This is your life. This is your politics. Know your candidate. Most you hear me talk to these guys all the time. They're incredibly approachable. They are. It's you don't see Senator punch you in the groin. That's not going to happen. They're very approachable. They're very nice. You can enjoy chatting with them. I highly encourage you to do so. But when I look at these redistricted maps, I don't see a lot of Democratic seats becoming toss-ups. Republican seats, I see Republican seats coming straight out Democratic seats. And I see a lot of Republican seats that are now, that were fairly comfortably Republican, who are now in toss-up territory. And once again, as I said yesterday, as we were running through the numbers, and I was getting real wonkish with this, there are 58 pretty much safe metro area House seats. There are 29 relatively safe Democratic Senate seats in the metro area alone. To control the Minnesota House, you need 68. They need 10. Three in Duluth, three on the House side, three in Duluth, three in St. Cloud, or not in Rochester, one in St. Cloud, maybe two in St. Cloud, Moorhead, Mankato. You know, Albert Lea is fairly Democrat. Winona is very Democrat. You have these seats. I mean, the Iron Range could go either way. The margin of error for the Republicans has become zero. They have to win seats, and they have to win seats where they are the minority party. And they have to do it fairly consistently across the board. Because reminder about my 68 or the 58 metro area seats that are safe Democrat, there are still four other seats which lean Democrat. Not toss up, lean Democrat, I didn't include in that list. So, yeah, like I said, in the House, it's becoming harder and harder. By the end of this 10 years, Republicans, I don't think we're going to have the ability to win the Minnesota House. I just don't. I think that their demographics are going to be impossible for them to overcome. Same thing goes for the Senate. It's 29. Now, it's a little trickier. Rochester, Duluth, there's two. You get that seat in Moorhead, that's a big one. There's three. And then number four comes, you know, St. Cloud, Mankato. Well, all of a sudden you are looking at a majority in the Senate. Now, once again, I don't think the Senate is nearly as dire than the House is for the Republicans, but they don't have a lot of margin for wiggle room. I think, once again, as we saw a lot of the analysis come out, most of the swing districts, the districts that became swing districts with this new redistricting, were Republican districts. Oh, and I can tell you right now, I hope Osmek runs in that district. Because I can tell you, I would love to be a fly on the wall when the Republican Party says, we ain't going to give you money because you ain't going to win. Happy holidays. Bon voyage, the orc. Oh, I'm going to miss him. We'll get him a fruit basket or something like that. We also have to remind ourselves, too, that the Republican Party has got just a smidge of a problem with the caucuses. Now, once again, I want to give Michael Broadcorp credit. He was the one that noticed this. State Republican, this is reading out of the Minnesota Reformer, their updated story today. The state Republican Party has said it's working through errors in data released to statewide candidates following the February 1st precinct caucuses, delaying campaigns even as they prep for local conventions set to begin this weekend. The state party released data to campaigns Friday showing, this is last Friday, 35,196 attendees of the February 1st precinct caucuses. But somehow, some way, only 17,801 people voted in the straw ballot for governor. Usually those numbers are maybe a few hundred, maybe a thousand off from each other. Not half, not in any capacity. Some candidates for the Secretary of State and the governor question the results and call for a postponement of local conventions. Normally the numbers of caucus attendees and straw poll voters are comparable. GOP Chair David Hahn released a statement on Tuesday saying the party held a call on Monday with the statewide campaigns to let them know the party was aware of the errors and had a plan to correct them. Okay. Yeah. I don't quite get that. You have a plan to correct them. Well, you shouldn't have to correct anything. There's either correct numbers or they're not correct numbers. So you're either saying you are going to release not correct the current numbers you have, you're going to release the correct numbers, or you're going to stand by the numbers you released first last Friday. It's one of the two. Some caucus data from a certain area and unintentionally included the names of people who attended previous caucuses but didn't attend the February 1st caucus. Hahn said the delegate and attendee information is being corrected, he said. So did you guys just include anyone that ever went to a caucus in Minnesota for the Republicans to kind of to boost your numbers? Is that what the – because that there's the other option. That kind of crossed my mind today. The Republicans usually trail behind Democrats when it comes to caucuses. Now, this year, I don't know. I mean, I've actually asked the DFL for the number of participants in the caucus, and a lot of them participated online. That was an option for the DFL this year. You could either attend in person or attend online. So I've asked them what their online attendance numbers were, and I have not heard back from them. So I don't know how it is, but I will say this. It probably made it more welcoming for a lot of people to participate in the online version. And traditionally, even when it's been in person, the Democrats have had more attendance. I remember a few years ago, was that in 2016, we were talking about, or excuse me, it was, I believe, yeah, it was 2014, when the Republicans were screaming about how, oh, take it all, look how excited we are. I said, I think it was that year that the Democrats had 400,000 people show up for caucus night. They had 120,000. I said, how are you this excited and you only have a third of the amount of people showing up as the Democrats do? You know, that doesn't seem to make sense. I think it was 2014 that was. When Dayton won his second term. Yeah. How'd the excitement work out for your – a statewide sweep by the Democrats, huh? All right. Excitement. Some caucus data from a certain unintentionally included names of people who attended previous caucuses. Those submissions made by local volunteers were not intentional, malicious, or related to any campaign. So what? Incompetent? Hansen, I guess that's the only word. If they weren't malicious or intentional or, you know, related to a campaign, well, then they were incompetent. Hans said nothing about that, noting that precinct caucuses are a grassroots operation organized and run by more than 120 local GOP organizations statewide. Let me step away from it again here. There has been an argument that BroadCorp has made repeatedly about the lack of organization within the Minnesota GOP right now. And one of the things which is really remarkable is I think that this kind of points that BroadCorp is correct on that as well, is that how – You've got a caucus. You know it's coming up. It's a big deal. I mean, these are the party faithful. These are the most loyal of your loyal, whether that's Democrat, Republican, or if there's another party that's having one. These are your favorites. And so you should have had pretty extensive conversations with your local people saying, here's how you do it. Here's how it's going to be done. This is what you got to do. And it doesn't sound like any of that stuff happened. Which once again goes back to BroadCorp's points that he's been making that there doesn't seem to be a lack of – there doesn't seem to be much organization within the Minnesota GOP right now. And I think this whole thing points to that as a point. I initially said, you know, maybe someone was trying to hype up a candidate or was trying to diminish a candidate from running away with it. Because let's face it, this is pure speculation. I'm taking names out of hats. Let's just say Paul Gazelka all of a sudden was going to win by 60% to the next best position was 10% and down the line. Well, then it becomes very difficult, even though it is a caucus, for that to, you know, you clearly have a majority of the Republicans supporting the one guy. I initially thought maybe this was the case, and specifically with Jensen, who still won by 38%. I mean, he's got three times as much. But was he heading for a much larger victory, and the Republicans basically said we can't have that, or else there's not going to be a point to having a primary at this point. That was my speculation yesterday. I'm now just kind of thinking this is a complete lack of management, that the Minnesota GOP is really broken to the core. Which doesn't surprise me. I mean, most Republicans is like, you want me to go out there and tell people what to do? What am I? Am I a community volunteer? How dare you? We pay people to do this, don't we? Not really. Not in how this – you need the volunteers. You need people out there. That's what the whole concept is. The state party also discovered an erroneous data entry in the Morrison County list, which Hans said has been corrected and resent to the campaigns. Was it like 20,000 more people or something like that? On Monday, North Oaks Democrat, North Oaks dermatologist Neil Shai, a Republican candidate for governor, accused a staffer for gubernatorial candidate Paul Gazelka of deliberately omitting a significant number of delegates and adding names of people to the delegate list who didn't attend the caucus in Morrison County, even though the attendance is required to be considered a delegate. Morrison County GOP announced Wednesday it will postpone the county convention to work through all this. Okay, so maybe there is some hijinks going on. Deliberately omitting a significant number of delegates and adding names of people to the delegate list who didn't attend the caucus in Morrison County. Well, then, sounds like you've got some issues. Gazelka declined to comment on pausing conventions or Shaw's allegations, saying he's going to let the state party work through the issues. A spokesperson for Senator Michelle Benson of Ham Lake, a lake of ham, who's running for governor, said Benson had no comment on the issue. Shai has called for a full forensic audit. Once again, there is no process called a forensic audit. You either have an audit or you don't. The full forensic audit is a term that comes from conspiracy loon balls. So just say I want an audit. He wants an audit of the GOP caucus data and the release of the original delegate sign-up sheets of the precinct caucuses. I think that's about the only way you're going to get around it at this point. He also demanded that local conventions scheduled to begin on Friday be postponed until March to allow time for the audit of the delegate sign-up sheets, which I would also agree with Shaw is probably the best bet. And I'm not saying this because I'm favoring anyone on the Republican side. Please! But it's a freaking clown car over there. No, I'm thinking that, you know, have you seen what the Republican Party has become as far as conspiracy theories? If you don't, you got to kind of do what Shaw is asking, because if you don't, there are going to be people who are, it's just part of the Illuminati. You know, it's going to be that. And so you'd probably going to, it'd be a good idea to do an audit of all the sign-in sheets and release all that information to all the campaigns. Attendees at the conventions will determine who will delegates for the state GOP convention in May when the party gathers to endorse a candidate for governor or other statewide offices. Republican Secretary of State candidate Kelly Janer Byrne has also called for postponing local conventions while verifying the list. Other Republican candidates for Governor Kendall Qualls on Tuesday joined Shaw in calling for a pause in the convention process to give time for data to be corrected. Qualls got into the race late on January 9th. He could benefit from more time. Qualls said fraud and errors were prevalent. The races would normally begin after their legislative and congressional redistricting maps were released on Tuesday, but now the state Republican Party is being delayed in giving voter data to candidates to merge into the new maps and to begin organizing. Once again, and Broadcorp has brought this point up, is like, this is basic politics 101. You guys should have had this stuff ready to go. And it's like all of a sudden you guys are looking at each other like, well, what the heck happened? Han said the period from the caucuses to the first conventions is short and confident that the local party unit boundaries and delegate allocations are affected by redistricting. Funny, don't hear the same issues coming from the DFL. You don't hear any of the same issues coming from the DFL. They seem to have been able to manage to get all this together. It's just you. Qualls said it's important that Republicans get their own house in order. Not going to disagree with that. A segment of Republicans have been energized to change election laws as former President Trump and his followers continue to erroneously claim the election was stolen from him in 2020. Walls noted that Republicans have called for audits nationwide to restore voters' faith in the election process. Sometimes those calls continued even after audits showed vote tallies were accurate all along because they're idiots. If I'm lying, I'm dying. We audited it. Everything was right. Do it again. Why? We just audited it and it's do a forensic audit. No, we just didn't. You're idiots. How else can we as a party claim to stand up for the election integrity when their issues ourselves are facing behind closed doors? You guys are a mess, man. Seriously, I'm enjoying this. This is manna from heaven. Absolutely. But you guys, this is a clown car show at this point. You guys got to get out of your own damn way. And don't get me wrong. Trust me, I can see the DFL shooting themselves in the foot like repeatedly 80 times before we get to the election. But this is not the way you're going to come storming back, because I can tell you right now, unless you fix this and fix this quickly, by probably postponing all your conventions and getting, you know, doing an audit at least and releasing all that information to all the campaigns, well, you're going to have a lot of people within conspiracy corner Qville on the right insisting it was the Illuminati. They're coming for us. The Illuminati. Oh, you're fun to mock. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll take a break, wrap up the show. When we do return, it's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Don't give me good songs, dang it. I'll just want to sit here and karaoke the entire show. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Let's get the AM 950 Wordle out of the way here. A lot of great entries. Thank you very much. Today, we're going to go with Gordon, who made the post up on this is up on the AM 950 live stream. He found 833 words. Where in the world are you finding all this? Where is there a search engine that you can type in three letters and it'll give you every word? Epoxies, strong boxes, homosexuals, heterosexuals, hoaxes all include O, X, and S in that order. We'll go with hoaxes. Ooh, speaking of Republicans, ooh, Republicans, it's all a hoax. Remember that. Can't trust anyone. Go lock yourself in your house. Don't come out. Gordon is our winner of the AM 950 calendar today. Congratulations. We have two more calendars to give out tomorrow and on Friday. Listen for the three letters at the beginning of the show for AM 950 Wordle. Find a word, any length, put them together, and there you go. If you'd like to get a calendar, once again, if you want to get a calendar when you don't want to have to do the Wordle stuff, just go to AM 950 Radio. Go to the subscriber page, make a one-time or recurring donation, and as a thank you, we'll send you a calendar. Gordon, congratulations, and enjoy that as, once again, well done with a litany of words on that. So well done. Once again, Native Roots Radio coming up here in the 6 o'clock hour. Robert, Ogama, their whole crew there, very good stuff. If you're not listening, it's must-hear radio, 6 o'clock hour every night right here on Isaacson's interview, because it's something that we mentioned yesterday with Denise Precht, and it's something we mentioned with Senator Isaacson. The Republicans, it used to be the Republicans wanted just to get rid of public education as a whole, because they thought it was an affront that everyone should not have the right to a public education. A proof of this is Republicans in South Carolina didn't even allow black kids in that state to get a high school diploma until 1948. That's not ancient history. That they were prevented from going past a certain age in the school. That's the way that was South Carolina. That was 1948. The reality is that Republicans want to kill public education. They feel as if they can do so. They might not want to shut it down completely. They know if they shut it down completely right now, that there would be too many people upset with them and they would lose elections across the board. But they've got a more nefarious thing that they're doing. One is they're trying to basically push charter schools. So basically all the public funding dollars goes into the private sector, and money that should be going into educating kids goes into people's, you know, bonuses and fourth vacation homes and Maseratis, and that's what they want to do. The other side of it is they want to find ways so that they can punish teachers because they can't stand the teachers union, which is actually one of the few remaining strong unions left in this country. So, just remember that. You can always homeschool your kids if you do not like the public school system. Ta-da! We're back tomorrow. Till then, see ya.